Vairena yami patayakshi shupala pandra. Shalvada yoga tivilasa vilokanajai. Jayanta akta diyakshayana sanadau. Katsanyam aporanurakta diyam punakim. Vairena. With envy. Yam. Lord Krishna. Whom? Nripatayaha. Kings. Shishupala. Pondra. Shalva. Adayaha. Kings, that means like Shishupal. Pondrika, Shalva, etc. Gati, upon his movements. Vilas, sporting. Vilokana, glances. Adyaihi, and so forth. Jayantaha, meditating. Akrita, thus fixed. Diyaha, their minds, Shayana, in the activities of lying down, Asana Adau, sitting and so on, Tatsamyam, a position on the same level with him, that is, a position in the eternal spiritual world. Apuhu, they achieved. Anurakta Dhyam, for those whose minds are naturally attached in a favorable way. Punaha Kim, what to speak of in comparison. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. There's one word in the word for word which I'm sure you've all learned by now. I think yesterday Maharaj, Ladananda Maharaj, who's asked us to give class today, was pointing out, and some devotees were remembering what it meant. There's one word, at least one word, which is the same in today's word for word, same verse, same word in the verse as yesterday. You know what that word is? Shayana. Yeah, Maharaj, you're on the ball there. You're not asleep. I think everyone else may have gone asleep, huh? What does this, besides Maharaj, what does this word mean? It can mean sleeping, it can mean taking rest. In this case it means in the activities of lying down. Lying down, resting, sleeping. It's like we have our last arti at night, Shayana arti. The arti of putting the Lord to rest. Usually we don't have a rip-roaring kirtan at that time. Usually a melodious, not maybe something like a lullaby, putting the Lord to sleep. Inimical kings, this is the translation. Inimical kings like Shishupal. Who else? Oh, it's up there anyway, isn't it? You've already got it. You've already got it on the board. There's no how did you all chant the Sanskrit so nicely? There's only English on the board. I didn't know you were all Sanskrit scholars here. Oh, very expert. Ah, huh? It's on the bottom there. Gopi Paramadana. Gopi Paramadana Madana Manohara Kaliya Dhamma Vida. I can't see it. Oh, it's here on the other board. Okay. Yeah. You're gonna. I look very impressed there for a minute.
The truth is revealed.
The truth. The only truth. Okay, who are the other ones? You've got it there. Pondraka and Shalva. Shishupal, Pondraka and Shalva were always thinking about Lord Krishna. Even while they were lying down, sitting or engaging in other activities, they enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord, being thus always absorbed in Krishna. They achieve spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Oh, no, it's not Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is 11th canto. This is the purport of Gopi Puranadana Prabhu and Sri Dayananda Maharaj, and others have translated and commented upon these verses of the 11th canto. On the eve of the disappearance of Lord Krishna from this world, Vasudeva became filled with lamentation, thinking that he had not properly utilized the opportunity of the Lord's personal presence to become perfectly Krishna conscious. There are lessons to be learned at every step here. This is one of the parts of the science of Krishna consciousness, to be able to see how Krishna is teaching us lessons in everything. Everything in the world actually is, you can understand, sometimes it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam also as the material energy, as like various ways it can be seen as varieties of gurus teaching us the truth, teaching us the nature of this world, and so on. So here we can also learn, very important point being mentioned here and in the purport, that Vasudeva was lamenting, thinking he'd not utilize his opportunity. How many of us will be lamenting when the time comes? Oh, I was given such a wonderful opportunity in this human life. I was given a wonderful opportunity by the mercy of Krishna to come into contact with Srila Prabhupada and his movement and many wonderful devotees. Oh, how I missed that, isn't it? How we missed the opportunity. How we wasted our time. We missed the opportunity. We didn't take advantage of it. I'm sure many of us felt like that, and many do now also. In regards to Srila Prabhupada, we were on the eve, especially after his disappearance from this world. Oh, I wasted so much opportunity. I didn't take advantage. This is a very purifying state, you can say, of consciousness. But it doesn't end there. It's just like those devotees who are fortunate, sincere, whatever it may be. Others may learn in different ways, but continue to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, even in his absence, even more intensely sometimes than in his presence. Even more intensely. One will not be bereft of the results of, let's say, taking advantage of his personal presence. As you know, the vani, or the instruction of the spiritual master, is considered more important than the what? Besides Paladananda Maharaj, the vapu. The vapu refers to the pardon? Yeah, the personal association or physical presence of the spiritual master or the Lord or the devotee. And the vani refers to the instructions of the spiritual master. So they're both wonderfully good, fortunate opportunities, of course. And one should take advantage of the vapu in the proper way. But of the two, Srila Prabhupada emphasized mostly that the vani is more important. The vani remains. These pure devotees, they don't, when they leave this, become unmanifest, let's say. Their presence is no longer physically manifested. They leave behind their instructions, just like a boat. They leave the boat behind on the shore so we can still get in. And just by getting in that boat, as long as we stay in that boat, when we'll reach the other shore, for sure. This is their grace, their mercy. This is their good fortune. We have this opportunity. So Vasudeva is lamenting that he didn't take advantage. Krishna was his own son. And now he's feeling like this. We also can always, we should always, this is a humble. We should always feel like that in a sense. We're not taking advantage. This will be, you think, oh, I'm taking full advantage. I'm doing all I have to do. No, we never think like that. We're always in the mood of, we can surrender more and more and more. There's no end to it. Another one of the inconceivable, transcendental nature of devotional service. It has no limits. The material world, everything is limited, huh? In one sense. In the sense that we perceive it. Everything is limited. How far can you go? How long can you go? How much pleasure can you squeeze out of it? Isn't it? Everything has its limits. And when we get fed up, when maybe it's the limit, we go to something else and try there. And again, the same thing. Devotional service has no limits. It's unlimited. Ever increasing. Surrender. For those who are in illusion, maybe this is not very good news. But surrender never ends. And the more you surrender, the more bliss, if you want to say it. Our stage, of course, it's mercy in various ways. But the more ecstatic the devotee becomes without asking. Surrender means I'm not asking for that. It's not a business deal. But Krishna reciprocates. As they surrender unto me, what does he do? Punish you? As they surrender unto me, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I punish them. Is that what he says?
Sometimes,
yeah. It's actually, we take it like that. Actually, his mercy is there. It's another form of his mercy. That he's taking away our attachments, the obstacles on our path to love of God. He's taking away the obstacles. We may perceive that as, this is terrible. I've served Krishna. I did so much for ISKCON. Look what happened to me. Look at me. Look at me. See what happened. I'm mad. What have I got out of it? We're still thinking sometimes like this. Oh, Krishna sometimes thwarts our, let's say, imperfect understanding or mixed understanding of what we're here for. We're not here to make a comfort zone exactly. A real comfort zone doesn't exist in this world. No such thing. It's an artificial, false concept. There is no such thing in this world as comfort zone. Is there? You think so for a few moments. How long does that last? It's not really there. So to try to make these kind of arrangements to enjoy ourselves in this world, this is not the plan of Krishna or the pure devotees. They want to deliver us from this. This is the cause. This yehi samsparsha jabhoga dukkhi yoni evites. This desire, this programmed to try to satisfy my senses separately from Krishna, is the cause of suffering. Even in the stage of mixed devotional service, it may come in. So Krishna very mercifully wants to remove the mix. Just like sometimes, I'm sure regularly here at Sri Mahaprabhu Mandir, did you have sweet rice? You have sweet rice sometimes? If somebody has put salt in the sweet rice, or sand, Prabhupada says, how will it taste? I remember one time someone did put salt in the sweet rice. It was a terrible taste.
Salt.
Well, if you like salt, I suppose, but excessive salt becomes a little bit unpalatable. It wasn't very pleasant. Bleh! You feel like vomiting. Pardon?
It causes vomiting.
It does cause vomiting, yeah. Yeah, so you feel like vomiting. You can give unlimited examples, and that's how the material world eventually you feel like vomiting. And you do vomit. And when we were youth, we were legally above age, we used to go and drink, not water, not even sweet rice with salt. We used to drink something, I won't mention it here in this holy association. You may have heard of it, I'm not sure, but I don't want to trigger off any, you know, bad memories. But anyway, we used to drink this substance, which made your head go a little wobbly, and you know, have a few misconceptions about things, more than you already do have. So sometimes we drink and drink, thinking that I'm going to be happy by doing this. Now, perhaps some of you did experience, or still do experience happiness from doing this, I don't know. But we used to think, we'll be happy from this. Huh? Did you have this experience? Some of you? Let me see who's there. Let me see. Who would have had that experience? So I can pick out a few names already.
Lemonade.
Huh? Lemonade, man. He doesn't know what we're talking about. I know. I thought about it a couple of weeks ago in New Grove. I was actually laughing at the fact that he had such a pure upbringing. It's a fact. He hardly knows what these things are. I mean, he knows, but he's hardly, you know, in this lifetime. Don't think you haven't experienced it in the last lifetime or previous lifetimes.
Plenty of
lemonade. That's how we have to become very innocent. I remember Lokanath Maharaj one time. He's also an extremely innocent devotee. One of his disciples from America said, Maharaj, can I please have a word with you? He told me this confidentially. He said, Maharaj, I'm having some problems with sex life. Maharaj couldn't quite work out what he was talking about, you know. And he thought, what is that, you know? He was married. And so he was wondering, what is it? He didn't know quite what to think. He said, the boys? No, Maharaj. And he told him what it was. Maharaj didn't know what it was. Something you do on your own, without a partner. He didn't know, he never experienced it. It was like a new thing. Some people never experience these things. They're so pure and fortunate. But either way, we learn our lesson. So we used to drink. And then after drinking, we go to the Chinese restaurant for a wonderful Chinese meal. And then we go to the toilet for a wonderful vomit. And I would say, Anna, because I was like going along with the scene, you know, I thought, what is this all about? What am I doing this for? From beginning to end, I've not felt happy. And now I feel terrible, especially I had forced teeth. And they used to fly out every time I vomited. It was so embarrassing. Sometimes I lost them, you know, I was so drunk I couldn't, groveling around in the vomit. This is material life, you know. Yuck. You know, you can't see what you're doing. You know. Someone else is urinating down that end and this. And it's like, oh, what life is this? You know? Is this happiness or what? I'm never going to do this again. And believe me, the next night we were doing the same thing. It's crazy. This is the material world. We punapanas, charvata, charvananam. We never learn our blooming lesson. We just go on and on and on like this, thinking, well, somehow or another, I'll get there in the end. I'll reach it. The vomit will be nice in the end. Sweet vomit. The salty sweet rice will be like nectar. Yes, eventually. One time the guru, he had a disciple who was like this, who was always trying to get some pleasure from this and that, and thinking eventually, it'll work, Gurudev. Can I do this? Can I do that? Can I marry this one? Can I marry that one? Can I go here? Can I go there? Guru had no choice. He was just like telling practically. So one day this disciple came in, the guru was sat there. The disciple came in, because he knew he was going to come in to ask for something. So the guru was sat there with a bowl of these little tiny sharks. You know these little chilies? They're red hot chilies. They're dried. And they're like, burn your mouth on touching your mouth. And the guru was eating it one by one. Going like this. The disciple said, watch for a while. One after the other, he was chewing on these burning hot chilies. And the disciple said, Gurudev, please excuse me, can I ask a question? Yes. Why are you eating these chilies? It looks like they're very unpleasant. Yes. Why are you eating? Because I'm sure that one day, one of them will taste like sweet nectar. And the disciple realized, you know, whatever we do trying to compromise or business deal with Krishna will not work. And eventually, as we heard, mercy sometimes comes by Krishna pointing that out to us. You know, we try this, we try that, another wife, another life, and more strife, and so on and so forth. We feel the knife, and eventually we wake up. How long do we have to go on? So Bhagavatam is to teach us by example. This is not the purpose of human life, just to go on birth after birth after birth, trying to enjoy this material world. This is no real, for the soul, this is an incompatible situation. The soul by nature is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. This material world does not facilitate that nature. The square pin in a round hole does not fit. We keep banging away trying to make it fit. Just if I do this little bit more, I'll be happy. Just get a little bit more money, I'll be happy. Just get a bit fatter, I'll be happy. A bit fitter, I'll be happy. A bit thinner, I'll be happy. A bit more, move the face here, I'll be happy. Huh? Eat this, do this, go here, go there. Say this, say that, vote for me, vote for you. Whatever it is, then you'll be happy. This is the advertising campaign of Maya. Promising so many things and it all ends up in heartbreak. Death. And even before death, so much disappointment. Fear and anxiety and so many things. Papa goes on. However, Narada Muni assured Vasudeva that the glories of Vasudeva, that means Vasudeva, father of Krishna, and his good wife, whose name is Devaki. He had many wives, this is the one here. Their glories were chanted throughout the universe because even the demigods worshipped the exalted status of the Lord's own parents. Vasudeva was not only concerned about his own spiritual position, but he also lamented for the Yadu dynasty, which had left the world in an apparently inauspicious way, being cursed by great Brahmins such as Narada and dying in a fratricidal war. Although the members of the Yadu dynasty were personal associates of the Lord, their disappearance from the earth was apparently inauspicious. And therefore Vasudeva was concerned about their eventual destination. It was only apparent. It was the arrangement of the Lord. His devotees, everything's arranged by the Lord for the various purposes of the Lord. So Narada here assures Vasudeva that even the demons who oppose Krishna, such as Shishupal, Pundraka and Shalva, achieve promotion to the Lord's own abode because of their constant absorption in thinking of Krishna. Therefore, what to speak of the exalted members of the Yadu dynasty who actually loved Krishna more than anything? Anurakta diyam punakim. Similarly, it is stated in the Garuda Purana, Agani naksuravaram samadhi chitpananto yang papino pishishupala shayodanadya muktim gatak smarana matra viduta papa kaksang shayak paramabhakti matam jananam. This is from the Garuda Purana. Even foolish sinners like Shishupala and Duryodhana, who showered abuse upon the Lord, were cleansed of all sins simply by remembering Lord Krishna. Somehow or another, their minds were absorbed in the Lord, and thus they attained liberation. What doubt then is there about the destination of those who are overwhelmed with devotional feelings for the Lord? Very similar verse to today, at least the translation. Vasudev was also feeling anxiety because on the one hand he was aware that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but at the same time he treated the Lord as his beloved son. In a relationship between father and son, sometimes the father must chastise the son and restrict him in various ways. In this way, Vasudev was feeling that undoubtedly he had offended the Lord in his attempt to train Lord Krishna as his son. However, Lord Krishna is actually pleased when a pure devotee absorbs in parental love for him and thus devotedly tries to care for him just as loving parents care for a small child. Krishna reciprocates the intense devotional feelings of such devotees by actually appearing before them as a young boy and acting just like their son. As mentioned in this verse, the demons actually chastise Krishna with feelings of enmity. Nevertheless, such demons attained liberation due to their absorption in Krishna. Therefore, what to speak of the destination of Vasudev, who chastised Krishna due to his overwhelming parental love for him? The conclusion is that the devotees of the Lord should never consider Vasudev and Devaki to be ordinary conditioned souls. Their relationship with Lord Krishna is completely on the transcendental platform of a Vatsalya Rasa, or parental love for the personality of Godhead. It has nothing to do with the parental love for the personality of Godhead. It has nothing to do with the parental love of this material world, which is based on a mood of sense gratification. Since the parents see their children in this world as objects of material enjoyment, there is no comparison between the two. Chalk and cheese, we would used to say. There is no comparison. There are two totally different qualities or dimensions. One is for the pleasure of oneself, Atmendriya, and one is Krishnendriya. Krishna enjoys being sometimes chastised, sometimes being beaten. Even an ordinary parent, this mood, because it's there in Krishna, sometimes comes out. We're trying to imitate Krishna, so thus we also have this little tendency in this world. Sometimes the parent with his child, I was watching out the window yesterday, There were some workmen, I think, here yesterday doing something. I don't know. Maybe they were devotees in workmen's clothes. Probably not, but they were maybe. But they were working, doing something. And there was one little boy there with a stick. And he was in the garden, and the devotee boy, shaved up with a little shika. I don't know whose son he was. But he was going up to these men, beating them with a stick. Beating them. And they were enjoying it like anything. They were playing with it. They were going like this. I don't know who they were. You know, trying to fend him off. But they were having great fun out there with this little boy who was trying to beat them with a stick. If a man had come along and started beating, there would probably have been a fight going on out there, and the police would have been here, and there would have been chaos out there. Trees would have been crashing to the ground, and all sorts of things would have been going on. But they were enjoying themselves. It was fun. So, I guess we all have this experience sometimes. There's a sort of innocence. It's not mixed with envy. It's kind of, maybe some little, but not really. It's an innocence is there, and is pleasurable. Sometimes the parents, Srila Prabhupada even tells a story one time of one minister who came. What was his, Disraeli or Gladstone?
Gladstone.
This minister came to see him in his room, in his ministry, his office, prime minister's office. And he was told to please wait. He waited and waited and waited. Hours passed by. Eventually he got rather impatient. He took a sneak inside, peek inside. And what did he see? What was Gladstone? Because he saw no one coming in and out all the time. Nothing. No one seemed to be coming or going. So he noticed that what was Gladstone doing? Prime Minister of England. He was playing the role of a horse. Probably had been a better role for him in general. But anyway, he was enjoying playing the role of a horse. And what was he doing?
Driving. His grandson was driving him around.
The yes, his little grandson was on his back. Gee up, come on, faster, gee up, come on, beating him like this. And he's, how do horses go? Whatever it is. Yeah, that's better, that's a good one. That's all they're really doing anyway, you know, we call it, you know, some political debates or some, whatever, I don't know the terms in politics. But basically they're all braying like horses or donkeys or some other type of being. So he was literally going around playing the role of a horse with his little grandson on his back, whipping him practically. And he was having fun, he was enjoying it. This is, at least for the while. So in a sense this is because it's a reflection of truth. Everything in this world has its origins in the spiritual world, you know. It's not sort of this world competing with the spiritual world. You know, hey, that's going on over there. What about over there? All these things. We were reading the other day, how Krishna was playing football with amalaki fruits and bale fruits. Not amalaki, what, some other fruit. Maybe amalaki, but different fruits. He was playing football, bale fruit and other fruits. They were enjoying themselves, just like kids do when they're naturally. Oh, when you let things be a little natural, then you can get a little better picture of the spiritual world. We interfere with it and make it look nasty by inventing all kinds of unnecessary things like cars and computers and God knows what. So many things which would become necessities because of the situation, but naturally speaking they're not necessary. All the gifts of nature are there already because they are reflections of the spiritual world. Perverted they may be by the modes of nature, and we may see them wrongly, we see them as objects of our pleasure. But when we learn to see them as objects of Krishna's pleasure, then even this material world becomes no longer, how to say, a diversion or something, you know, I've got to avoid it or whatever it is, you know, terrible place, Maya, and so on. But one can see it as Krishna's place, as Krishna's energy. Everything belongs to Krishna. And even in this world, one can feel the reciprocation of Krishna in this way, by learning how to become Krishnendriya, how everything should be used. For the pleasure of Krishna. And the kulyena Krishna Shilanam. We should cultivate this mood of doing everything Krishna Anushilanam. Everything should be for Krishna's pleasure. Just like here we see, everything Vasudeva did is for Krishna's pleasure. And it's natural that one may feel sometimes, oh, even in Arjuna, in ordinary relationships, we may try and sincerely to please someone, we may do something, maybe they feel, we think they're upset. But our sincere intention was to please them. So he's feeling like that. Oh, Krishna, he's God. But I've chastised him. Arjuna has the same impression. I think, Maharaj, you were quoting that verse yesterday, Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? We sat together, I've treated you like an equal, a friend. Never mind. Dementia comes to all of us sometimes. Translation?
Like A.P. Madhavan Prasavani Rattvam. My dear Krishna, like A.P. Madhavan Prasavani Rattvam. Hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Sakiti. In our friendship, we've been sat down together, we've lied down together. I've called you, hey Krishna, hey Yadava, oh my friend. Whatever I may have done in madness or love, please forgive me. I didn't realize how great you are. Mm.
So, this is in Gita. But Krishna, in his relationships with his devotees, in one sense, you could say he doesn't even want that. In family life also, that reverential mood is not there. It's not like when the husband comes home from work, the wife is there. Say, for instance, the husband is, you know, a magistrate in the court. And the husband comes home and the wife is stood there. Your Honor. Welcome home, Your Honor. Stand up, everybody. His Honor has come. It'll be an insult. He'd take it as an insult, would he not? Or if he was the president. Oh, great president, welcome home. It's like an insult, isn't it? You take it as an insult, you know. It depends who the president is, yeah. But in normal, you know, human dealings, it would be seen as a as an insult. This age of Kali is a little bit abnormal. But anyway, it would be seen as soon as he comes in. The wife would be there. Where have you been? You're late! What have you been up to? Even Rukmini would chastise Krishna like that when Krishna would be off in the assembly hall and he'd be late coming back. Why are you always away? You're always paying attention to all the other, and you never come. Let me get on his case. Typical situation. Be there with a frying pan. Where have you? He's the president of America. Maybe not the president of America, but president of something. Where have you been? Your dinner's burnt, look at it. It's gone cold. I cooked your favourite apple and blueberry pie. And you're late. You're chastising. If anyone else was to do that, immediately they'd be arrested by the security office. Locked up. Maybe even shot. And the wife can do that. This is the intimacy. The intimacy. Although we see in this verse that demons like Shishupal and Pondraka and Shalva and others, etc., achieve liberation. He mentions here that their resolve, although they got liberation, sometimes they even, like Putana for instance, she instead became a nurse, but she didn't enter into the inner sector. Described she was on the outer sector. There are countless nurses. Countless expansions of Krishna. So you get what you deserve and what you desire. So the animosity, sometimes they merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, depending on their mood and the way that, you know, they resort at the time of death. And so some of them, of course, are eternal associates of the Lord, like Shishupal is not an ordinary person, of course. He's a demon in this particular form. And he's acting like a full-on demon. There's no two hoots about it. He's a full-on demon. Even though, as you probably know, he was a great devotee. Who was he?
Jai!
Jai! Not chai, jai. Whenever you're on the trains in India, those people keep going by, jai, 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 jai. I go, jai, jai, jai. And they really think I want jai, you know. They come over, jai Shri Krishna, Hare Krishna. Bewildered. And they're what planet they take birth in. Chai Loka? Always chanting Chai. But Jai, Jai and Vijay. The gatekeepers of Lord Narayan, as you know, they took birth three times as demons. And one of their appearances, the last one of those three, was Shishupal and Dantavakra. Not much said about Dantavakra, but he was also a very powerful demon. And killed also by Krishna. And Shishupal, of course, more is known. He's lifetime animosity. From the moment he came out the womb, he was blaspheming Krishna. He was he didn't have to be trained. It wasn't by bad association. He was straight into it. Right from birth, you know. He was, what was it? He was born with three eyes or something, wasn't it?
Brain like
an ass. he was really into it right from the word go. And it was said that whoever, he had these three eyes, and when he would see the person who would kill him, the third eye would disappear. So it so happened when he saw Krishna, the third eye disappeared, and mother was devastated. So she got the boon that Krishna would not kill him unless he blasphemed Krishna in one go, you know, like blah, 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 like this, more than 99 times. So he always counted very carefully and wouldn't stop at 99. So he was protective, but this time he lost it. And Krishna gave him his mercy and just severed his head. And he was liberated. He was liberated. So whatever form, they get liberation, but not necessarily the same as the pure devotees who have loving affection to Krishna. They enter into the inner loving pastimes of the Lord. So rest assured that we are not, obviously we don't consider ourselves in any category anywhere near comparable as this, but at the same time we're very fortunate because we are able to serve and associate with Srila Prabhupada and our other acharyas in our succession. We're all very, very confidential associates of the Lord. Extremely confidential associates. So confidential in Prabhupada's case, not even mentioned. Some of the Bhaktivinoda Thakur reveals his own personal relationship with Krishna and who he is. But that may not be the case. But we can understand for sure, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, that he is very most, even Lord himself says, describing, we can understand he's describing Srila Prabhupada, he's more Senapati Bhakta, that he's the Lord's chief field commander in this world to deliver the conditioned souls. Practically everyone in this world today is demoniac. So many times Prabhupada says practically everyone's like a little Hiranyakashipu or Sishupal or Ravana, in their little ways. Same mentality, basically. We may not be Krishna conscious like Shishupal, because he's always thinking of Krishna, even animal. What's the verse by, is that also by Narada Muni? There's one verse, I forgot. The English is that something like, he considers that the, you know, that the position of demons like this, like Shishupal and Kamsa and others, who are constantly thinking of Krishna, is greater than that of even himself, you know. Some by envy, they're always thinking of Krishna, some by love, and different ways. You remember that verse, Maharaj? I don't know if I've referred to it sufficiently to even.
Vaishasneha.
Pardon?
The word is Vaishasneha.
Hmm. I can't remember. I mean, we've heard it many times, I never learned it. But the point is that they're absorbed in Krishna. If somehow or another someone can become absorbed in Krishna, they get great benefit. Even one time when Prabhupada was, I think it was 75, when there was a very strong move of the German government to try to crush ISKCON in Germany, as still going on in some countries, there were terrible, so many newspaper articles. That movement wasn't very well known in Germany at the time. All of a sudden, practically overnight, the government arrested all the devotees they could get their hands on. They confiscated the property. They froze all the funds. They took all the books, everything in Germany, practically overnight. A big thing. It was mainly because somebody joined the Hare Krishna movement. Their son joined, or their daughter joined, something along those lines. And they became extremely irate and started to really find fault. And in this way they found fault in our movement in various ways. So there were big, big articles all over the newspapers within a day or two. Big articles. Pretty much, damning the Hare Krishna movement in every way they could. So they were written in German, of course. And these articles were brought to Srila Prabhupada. I think he was in India at the time. And they were given to Prabhupada, and they were saying, Prabhupada, there's terrible newspaper articles in Germany about our movement. And they showed Prabhupada these articles. Prabhupada didn't appear to be able to read German. So he was looking at these articles, everywhere, the headlines were Hare Krishna. All the way down through the article, every other line practically was either the Hare Krishna or Hare Krishna Ma Mantra, or Krishna, or something that Krishna was there, all throughout the article. Srila Prabhupada referred, this is very wonderful articles. Everywhere the name of Krishna is there. Everywhere. Overnight, everyone in Germany had heard about Krishna. Everyone's saying, what's this Hare Krishna movement? Never heard of it before. What is it? Everyone in Germany was reading about Krishna, even negatively. But they were, somehow or another, they were being exposed to Krishna. What we couldn't do in, I don't know how many years, 6 years, the media did in 5 minutes. They informed everyone about Krishna, even if there's a little misunderstanding there, but somehow or another people were talking about Krishna. And then the natural thing is that they want to find out more about it. When something is criticized, and it's the best way to sell a book, have it banned. Everybody wants it. What is this book? What's in it that's made it so interesting and it's got banned? Human curiosity, So like that, whatever it is, somehow or another, just like on Harinala, somehow or other people they come into contact with Krishna. Prabhupada wrote one, he spoke one time when they would say, Prabhupada, when we go on Harinam, they seem to be atheist and antagonistic. That used to be quite common. Is there any point, Prabhupada said, oh, great point. And they were waiting, what will Prabhupada say? Those atheists, if they continue to come, and whatever reason it is, in contact with the Harinam, they will all become theists, he said, in time. It's the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So we have this good fortune of associating with Prabhupada. And if we continue to follow, if one serves a pure devotee, it is greater than serving Krishna. It is more dear to Krishna than anything else. So we have this opportunity of pleasing Krishna the most. Not by directly serving him, but by pleasing his pure devotee. This is the most pleasing service and the surest way to be taken back to Godhead. If we stick at Prabhupada's lotus feet and don't, even though there may be ups and downs, some difficulties may be there, no doubt. Especially in the association of devotees, sometimes there's some misunderstanding. But that will pass. Stick at Prabhupada's lotus feet, follow his instructions, pray for the strength to pass through the trials and tribulations, etc. Humble, tolerant. The one will surely reach that goal. That boat which Srila Prabhupada has brought to take us to the other shore is there, and he is the captain of the ship. And if one stays on that ship, even if the sea sometimes is a little rocky, it doesn't do much good jumping off the boat when it's a rough ocean. If you jump off the boat, you're not going to make it. One will drown. Or if you get on another boat, you're taking your risk. Stay on Prabhupada's boat, and it's rest assured, Srila Prabhupada would take us back to Godhead, back to where we should be going.
Okay. So many points in this purport which I've missed, and which you can probably see your clearer vision. But we'll finish there. Are there any questions or comments? I have a question. Where's my gumcha? Okay, don't forget. Yes, some question?
Yes.
Yes?
You were talking about some program and preaching, or as you understand it, Krishna playing, that I share part of the saying that atheists can very easily confuse. How does it go together with what the kind of practice would be? Should not preach to non-devotees?
Preach the glories of the holy name to the non-devotees. There's a little difference. Everyone's a non-devotee. So we chant Hare Krishna, but we don't preach the glories of the holy name to them. There's a difference there. That's why when you read these 10 offenses, you have to be a little careful what you're reading. Sometimes we miss out some of the important things, you know.
There's a book that I got from the temple up there that talks about what the name does. It's supposed to be treated like what the important words are something greater than the name.
Yeah. It's wonderful to meditate on these things, how much benefit one can get from the various names unknowingly. Now, of course, there's another aspect working here. Besides the mercy of the holy name, which is showering its mercy on everyone as the personal presence of the Lord, it's the nature of the devotee. The nature of the devotee is to be compassionate. We're supposed to be following in the footsteps of Nityananda. When Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were preaching, and then Jagai and Madai didn't appreciate their preaching, Nityananda, he did not become angry with Jagai and Madai. He simply wanted them to be delivered. And by his mercy, by his compassionate mood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered them. Even though they were offensive to Nityananda, the Lord delivered them. Haridas Thakur was the same when the Muslim guards were trying to kill him. He simply wanted them to be delivered. He had no animosity. So the devotee's mood also is significant. Not just that somehow or other they've come into contact with a name, but the actual mood of the devotee is also very important. That they actually want that the living entities, the conditioned soul, should be delivered. So if we assist Prabhupada, we're assisting in that mood, even if we don't have it. We're assisting him who does have it to fulfill his desire that all living entities shall go back to Godhead. Anything else? Yes?
All living entities have their hands. You don't...
You've asked me that one before.
Yeah. Is it true or not?
By the mercy of the pure devotee, everyone will go back to Godhead. When Vasudeva Dutta spoke to Lord Chaitanya, he said, "Let me stay here forever. And let all the living entities in the universe go back to Godhead." The Lord said, "By your wish alone they've gone back to Godhead. You don't need to stay here." So because of the love of the pure devotees and their compassion for all conditioned souls, nothing is impossible. Every living entity can go back to Godhead. It is not our power to do that. But by nature, every living entity is the eternal servant of Krishna, no matter how fallen they are. And that nature will remain, it may remain millennium after millennium in a dormant state, but that nature is destined to awaken at some point of time. It will awaken at some point of time, we cannot say when.
More
falls in. Pardon? Yeah, living entities are coming and going all the time. You can't count the living entities. There are so countless living entities, it's not measurable, immeasurable. More come into this material world. It's a constant flow. It's like anything in this world, you know, people are born and people die, and then more are born and more die. It's a constant flow, even within our own experience. So what to speak of the experience of coming into the womb of the material world and leaving it? You know, it's constantly going on, constantly. So, you know, these things are immeasurable, totally immeasurable. But by nature, the living entity is spiritual. By nature, the living entity is the servant of Krishna, in one form or another. And by nature, eventually, that will be, that dormant nature will manifest. But when, you can say, maybe millenniums, lifetime of Brahma after lifetime. It may be. Or it may happen in this lifetime. It can happen in this lifetime in a very fallen condition. Even animals, insects, they can be delivered by the mercy of a pure devotee.
I heard someone say years ago that every day of Brahma is living in the uniform life.
In a day of Brahma, yeah. Yeah, and it's understood like that, that they get that chance in a day of Brahma. Going through the 8,400,000 species of life, maybe more than once, maybe many times. It will vary. Good advice from? Oh yeah, they're always giving us good advice, but we may not listen. Krishna is giving very good advice in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. But whether we follow, that's another thing. We have that free will. Krishna said to Arjuna, now I've told you everything. Now you may do what you want to do. People take that wrongly. They think like that, that, oh, Krishna said anything, but ultimately he said, do whatever you like. Now you do what you want to do. I've told you everything. Now I've explained to you everything that's to be known. Now you choose. What do you want to do? Yes, you mean is now I've taught you everything, but you have free will. Now you have to decide. You want to follow it or you not want to follow it. That's your choice now. I've taught you everything that's needed to be known.
Maya is what is not.
Pardon?
Maya is what is not.
Maya is that which is not. And that meaning, that which is not, is that we consider it to be the reality. We consider it to be all in all. We consider ourselves to be this material world, and this material world belongs to us. These are the illusions. It's illusion. The actual Maya is not like that wall is Maya, or there's a person. That's Maya. No, it's how we perceive it. That's what's Maya. As soon as you change your perception, even what we would normally say, oh Prabhu, that's Maya, it's no longer like that. One doesn't see it like it. It's a change of our perception, not a change of the person or the thing that we're perceiving. But the change is a change of our perception, how we see it. If we see it in relationship with Krishna, it's not, well, properly, it's no longer considered to be Maya as such, but rather truth. Because everything is related to Krishna and everything belongs to Krishna. Anything else? Okay. Vantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bo.